Good. So welcome, everyone. ARIES Working Group call. Today in the agenda, we have a couple of topics. Sam, if you could add the topic which you mentioned about to the agenda, will be great. We'll start with the automated data agreement, where today with us is Jan Lindquist, who will talk about that. And that will have a direct connection to the previous topic, which we had on the previous call about the Forget Me protocol. So we'll see the connection. And this is why I wanted to bring Jan here, because he definitely will have a valuable input to that discussion as well. So reminder, obviously, the call is recorded. The transcript will be placed at the bottom of the page after the call. The antitrust policy. Reminder to everyone, please feel free to add yourself to the attendees list if you would like to keep contact to yourself and share with the group who you are and what you are doing here. And let's start with the welcoming introduction things. Do we have anyone, maybe except you, Jan, because you will have time to introduce yourself right after we finish the routine. Anyone who would like to introduce himself to the community and share why you're here and what you're doing interesting? Good, then let's move on. Announcements. Any announcements which people would like to share with the community?
I would add a note to the list there, or another point. The Findi agent that I mentioned last week, I haven't had a lot of chance to dig in, but they added an ARIES agent test harness back channel and test set, and they are all of the tests for AIP-1 other than revocation. So that it looks like they don't support revocation are all running and running on a regular basis. We're going to add one more test suite. Right now they've got Findi to Findi, Findi to Akapai, and Akapai to Findi, and we're going to add the ARIES framework, JavaScript and .NET ones as well to that set. So pretty cool that, we didn't have any, we didn't support them, if you will. We didn't get asked any questions, and everything's running and working and now published. There's also a couple of Verity tests as well, for those who hadn't heard about that, in ARIES agent test harness. So that's cool.
I'd love to add a point at the end for one more announcement. We're still finalizing the details, but would love to kind of present it on this call, as well as bounce off any suggestions that people on this call might have. But I would like to present a Code With Me proposal that we're working on for native mobile frameworks for ARIES capable of the BBS plus functionality with JSON-LV and whatnot. So I'd love to use that time to make an announcement slash present a brief document.
Yeah, that will be great. I mean, if we'll have enough time today, maybe, I don't know how much time do you need, but if not, then we can allocate some time in the next week so we can go through that in more details. That works?
Yep, that works.
Yep, perfect.
I'd like to just announce that the Identity Implementers Working Group call is tomorrow, the hour following this one. And that's where we like to review a bunch of things that happened in the various SSI working groups and coordinate a few things. Also, I've invited Javier Vila from SICPA to give us an overview of what SICPA is doing in terms of identity. And a lot of their efforts are new to me. And so I thought it would be great to have an overview from them to our community. So I hope you all can join tomorrow, the hour following this one.
And since we are on that topic, since SICPA is the Swiss organization or Swiss company, and we, as a Human Colossus Foundation, we are based as well in Switzerland, there is interesting ongoing activity right now happening in Switzerland where government opened up for public review or public comments to the document about what to do with the digital identity in Switzerland. And they are mentioning firmly decentralized identity solutions like the overall SSI. And they're asking organizations and the different communities to comment on that and tell them what to do with that. And that is related with some voting which happened some time ago when they asked if they would like to have a digital identity run by the government. And the community or the society said, no, we don't want to do that. And they are right now looking for what to do to move on with the digital identity, which seems to go much more in the decentralized way. So I think it's worth to follow that discussions there. I will try to find the official link to the document which they issued so you can take a look. Okay, any other announcement?
Yep, I'd appreciate that. And also, he will probably mention that to Mauro. One of the big things we're all working on is interoperability. So I think it's important to follow all the different efforts the especially large groups like SICPA are doing.
Yep. Okay. Any other announcements? If not, then let's move on to the related status. Related status and work updates. Anyone would like to share something interesting?
Does it have to be interesting?
Yes, that's one of the. Now, obviously, everything is interesting, whatever is happening, right?
Another bit of news that I wanted to share on the that is sort of running through the Aries agent test harness is the AF Go team has put out a full back channel that is almost ready to go. There's one thing they're working on, but it has did exchange and credential exchange with JSON LD verifiable credentials for BBS Plus and LD signatures. So a full set of tests running under the test suite with Akapai for that. So that's kind of cool as well. So we're getting there with more libraries, A, using the test harness, but also supporting JSON LD and interoperably supporting those things. So that's good news.
Right.
And interesting, I think. Interesting.
For sure.
Yeah, Steve, just to add to that, we're currently using that as well to work through interoperability with our IBM assets as well.
Good. One other thing I'll raise that may or may not be of interest on this, but I wanted to talk about one of the things going on here is one of our devs, Andrew Whitehead, as most of you know, has done a bunch of work on BBS revocation scheme that he's got running and has very interesting properties. A credential registry, it's basically got all the kind of features we would want. It's you don't have it's a proof of non-revocation in zero knowledge, so you don't have to give an identifier for your credential. And it has a registry size of a million plus credentials. good reasonable sizes for the registry itself. A registry is can be retrieved by the prover in a single request. So it's just basically a file that they download and then process and then construct a proof of non-revocation. And the verifier does not have to download a large chunk of files or anything like that. So super interesting attributes to it, all of the things we wanted, which is reasonable size, fast, single transaction. So there's no deltas to collect as there is with Indy or some of the other schemes. Anyone interested in that, let us know and we'll happy to share and go. It is tied to BBS Plus.
Good. I forgot about one small interesting thing, which could be an interest of you. During the ACDC work at Trust Over IP, we started working on this matrix table, which which basically set aside all the kind of their whole credential things, claims, things like that, all the technologies which we are aware of and trying to compose them and see what does what and what kind of requirements are requested or needed from the business side as well, and as well from the technical aspects, what is able to do, what it's not, how to basically compare them in a sense. Feel free to contribute to that document, completely open. The link is in the meeting page, and yeah, the intention of that is to clarify why we need something as ACDC to address some of the pressure problems right now, and how that compared to any other solutions, and how, for example, we can improve other solutions to support some of the features which ACDC brings to the game. So yeah, feel free to look it up and contribute if you have.
I'm going to keep bringing this question up because I have not heard an answer from anyone on it, but has anyone been able to address the GUID problem, the problem that graph serialization of JSON LD objects contains GUIDs that are signed by the issuer?
Could you elaborate on that? Like, what do you mean by...
When you serialize a JSON LD credential, the definition of the data graph contains unique identifiers that the issuer then signs, such that when you present the credential to the verifier, you see unique identifiers that would let you correlate a credential from one issue or from one presentation to.
As far as I know, that is the identity of the, or an identifier for the subject. And as far as I know, that remains, unimplemented in BBS Plus.
And what's more, it's not just the identifier of the subject, it's the scope identifiers of the data graph, meaning the way they serialize the data graph, there's a GUID for each scope in the graph. And so even if you fix the subject identifier binding problem, you still have to fix also all the scope identifiers as well.
Is that in BBS Plus or as well?
My understanding, the JSON LD serialization problem, not necessarily your signature yes. scheme, but so that means that those credentials are, you cannot do zero knowledge disclosures on those credentials because you're leaking information.
Yeah.
Right. And I think this is partially something because this problem was addressed by Sam in a slightly different context from the perspective of the security of the credential, that you have to serialize the whole RDF graph to be able to, you know, have a security in place. Otherwise, you're just referring to something which is somewhere and you don't know what it is. I think we discussed that here on the call. So as far as I know, from the perspective of that, what ACDC suggests and how we are doing it there, we are trying to address that problem. And the problem is addressed through the digest of all the items within that. So if you are, for example, using a schema to describe the data model, which is within the Verhol credential, then you have immutable schema, which is referenced by the self-addressing identifier, and all the scopes which are there, they are digests as well. So you can compose as complex schema as you like, but you're doing that in the immutable way through the self-addressing identifiers. I'm not sure if this will address the problem of this disclosure, which you are talking about, the zero knowledge proof, but that will be interesting to learn more about that, to figure it out if this will solve that problem as well.
It sounds like the closest thing to a solution I've heard so far. No one has given me a better explanation than that yet. So, you know, it's one thing to ask whenever someone says we're using JSON-LD. So far, no one has been able to fix the non-correlatability problem between the issuer and the verifier with JSON.
We can easily address that on the ICDC call if you have time to join us. Next one is on Monday, and we can discuss that. Or I can bring that topic there and bring the answer here on the next call.
I look forward to the update here on this call.
Perfect.
Yeah, I do too. That's of interest to us. So whatever the resolution is, I'd be interested in hearing that. Thank you very much.
We'll bring that up. Okay, good. Any other work updates or announcements, or we can move on to the main topic today?
Hey, I have one last mention. Please. My team found what seems to be a bug in AKAPI when using the multi-tenancy feature. It allows that other users can see the each other credentials. Seems to be a major problem. So we were working in this, just presented maybe a solution or a report to the community.
Okay. The earlier you can share that with us, and you know how you were able to do that and what you can expose, let us know.
Okay.
I think the best will be to do it through the GitHub issue, or should be done much more privacy-preserved way.
You can raise the security issue.
Yes.
That would be much appreciated. Okay.
Good. Then if nothing else, then Jan, stage is yours.
Hey guys, it's been a while. We haven't talked. I came here, I don't know if you guys remember, I was working with the consent receipt or the record using verifiable credentials. And I heard from Robert that there is a proposal to do forget from a privacy perspective, the data that's being collected to forget access or the data that has been collected. And Robert asked, why don't you present some of the work we have done in NGI ESIF Lab? And I thought I'd introduce, and I can share a screen as well. I see that you're already started.
Yep. Please do so. The screen
pass
is yours.
Me the link. Is it yet? Let's see. There we go. So I'd like to try to keep this as an open dialogue since you have an open proposal. I think it was Sam that you sent in to introduce this forget mechanism. And I thought I'd introduce what we have been doing. This is my company, Lenaltech, together with iGrant.io, who's doing the actual development on the mobile and the backend to support what we call a data agreement, which would be your consent record and receipt that's exchanged upon you creating a verifiable credential or when you're doing the proof. And I thought I'd give you a very short demo at one point just to demonstrate. It's not a complete demo, just to show a snapshot of what we're doing. Are there any questions or before I start, or I'll just start diving in otherwise? Okay. With this link, and I did post a link for you guys to take a look, is where we've documented under this NGI ESIF Lab infrastructure call, our data agreement specification. And we also have, there is some correlation. You've maybe seen the J-link did method. There is another method being introduced associated with my data, and also a number of protocols to support the exchange during a verifiable credential or a proof presentation and how we're using the decor. And I'm going to go into a little bit more detail here. But the first document I thought of sharing is this data agreement specification. And here you get an overview of what we're attempting at a higher level. So if I go into what we're trying to set up is these agreements between organizations. So let's say a data controller or a verifier or issuer is setting up a relationship with an individual. We create a data agreement that is exchanged between the two in order to secure this is what we have understood as to what data is being collected, which jurisdiction, is there geo restriction, what a number of the privacy requirements that you want to have in place, they're being exchanged. And this information can be used in subsequent interactions with third parties as well. And I think that will be helping in the future when we're going to more the governance aspect of, okay, how do you enforce that the data is not being shared? By using the data agreement, that enforcement can be done automatically. And what we want to do is associate these data agreements with what we call a data protection impact assessment. I don't know how familiar you guys are, but organizations typically, if they collect some set of information and they want to have an understanding of the impacts, they do a risk assessment. And in evaluating, looking at where the data is being processed, stored, communicated across countries, organization, are they applying data minimization, how long they're keeping, you get out a report, this DPIA. What we are doing under the ESIF lab is automate how do we get this assessment. And we have another company that we're collaborating, a third one, called PrivacyAnt, based in Finland, to get the results of their DPIA and then feed it into a data agreement. So that's why we call it an automated data agreement project. So we want to simplify this process. We're looking at the life cycle of this data agreement, which again, it's similar to your consent record. And that's a requirement from privacy that you are keeping logs of what is agreement between individual and the business. I didn't mention before, but I am the co-editor of a new ISO standard 27560. Originally, it was based on the Kantara. I don't know some of you have seen the consent receipt record and receipt. Well, there's a continuation of that work, and now we're creating an international standard. We call it 27560. Where we're actually trying to map, make sure that the data agreement we create now is compatible or very close to what's being created in the 27560 in ISO. I'll tell you, it's not an easy task to try to standardize things in ISO. It is can take a three-year cycle. But I think we're getting close to almost finishing with our working draft. So the life cycle of the data agreement, we create the definition, which you can think of like the schema base that we're going to be using. And then there is a preparation. So a business takes that schema and starts filling out the default values in order to then start do a capture. So when you're actually doing the data exchange, you're also capturing, here's a data agreement. And then we can do on the fourth stage, a proof or demonstration to an auditor or internally that, yes, we have these records in place. We can demonstrate that has been performed. Are there any questions? You guys are so polite and quiet. Well, I'm going to go straight into what I think might be more interesting is looking at it from the ARIES work. So when you issue a credential, and this is a technique we have applied. I don't know if you can see if it's too small of a character. Is it fuzzy? But basically,
Jan, a quick question before you continue.
Sure, Keith.
So if the goal is to automate this, does that mean that these there's going to be sort of an ongoing verification that if there were some non-compliance, that it would be flagged at the moment of non-compliance,
The idea is that you can block. So if you're trying to send data to a third party, it's blocked.
Oh, it could be blocked. Okay.
Yeah, and also how we can capture the anonymization that should be applied to the data. So that's also can be applied. So it's not just simply the presentation proof, but you're having an agreement that says this is the technique that will be applied, collection method. And also it's important where are you getting the source as well. Many companies will get a third party and then combine them with your data. Here we're creating credentials, we're creating presentation proof. And in that instance, that is the source. That's what's being shared with these data controllers. Okay. Does that answer your question, Keith?
Yeah, I think keep going through. I think it'll probably become clearer as you go through this.
Right. So what we're doing is using the decor in order to, when a credential offer is made, we attach this offer data agreement. You can see the protocol and the other link that was provided. And we can spend more on that if interested in separately or in a future call. If at the same time that you see this presentation of this data and the conditions, you can accept it or you can reject it. So we're using the credential rejected in order to pass that information. Or if you accept it, it'll be as part of your credential request. We have both for issuing a credential, and we also have it for presentation. Let's see, here we go. So we can, when the presentation request is made, we make an offer agreement, and then that DA is sent, and then you get it accepted. I'm going to show what is a DA first before I go and give a very brief demonstration. So going towards the end, you'll see some references to Kantara. So we have the section giving an overview of what a data agreement schema would look like. Again, this is changing somewhat, but it gives you a general overview, describing a purpose with PII categories. So and this is an interesting part, and I don't describe it very well here, but it's, we're trying to capture for every attribute that's being conveyed, what is a designation? What category? So is it especially sensitive? Is it not sensitive? Is it a special category? So we're capturing in this data agreement the characteristics of these attributes when they're being shared. Because once you've collected it as an issuer verifier, you need to handle it in a special way. And then we have all the other processing conditions of retention and jurisdiction and transfer and so forth. And again, the goal is not only to create a record for the issuer verifier, but it's also to provide the individual receipt. And that's, I think, the power of creating these data agreements. They can at any time look and see, oh, this is what they're collecting about me. This is the data, this is the jurisdiction. So I'm going to give you a brief demo. Let's see if everything works as expected. So this is the iGrant app where we have, let's see. Oh, where'd it go? Ah, just when you wanted to see it, it goes disappear. There it is. Okay. Okay, so we have already pre-downloaded. This is a COVID test. I can give you another link if you guys want to test it out and see this for yourself I'll put it in the chat. There we go. And here we have three different use cases. This is the travel case. So at the connection, you're connecting with a test center. So you're creating a credential. And where we're identifying, yes, you have COVID or you don't have COVID, and if you can travel. So first you connect, then you issue the data. And then what I was going to demonstrate is this step where I'm going to verify fire. So I'm going to board a plane and they need a check. So we're doing the scan of access. And what we should see is the credential, the proof and the data. And you can see we can make it visible or not. Okay, if we could do, okay. So at the bottom, you'll see the data agreement. And this is what I think is really cool with the demos, that the data agreement that was sent through the Decor is being displayed now over at the point of presentation. So you'll see these are the data points that are being exchanged. And here we have the reason, whether the lawful basis, if you want to see a full privacy policy, the jurisdiction, is it shared with third parties, and so forth. This is not a complete list, but it demonstrates how we can send this information. And to relate to the proposal to forget, what we're looking at in ISO on 27560 is add a link or ability to how do you invoke your privacy rights. So forget is one, withdrawal is another, blocking the usage and access, portability and such. So we should try to, if we're working together, figuring out how do we add, how do you apply your privacy rights, of one of them being this forget. And that kind of concludes my demonstration and overview. I first would like to kind of get, you know, input from the group. Can you tell me more about this option of forget? Is it a different context from what we're trying to do with the data agreement? How can we collaborate to see that we have the same mechanism? And this is open source, and we can contribute parts of this in to the community. So.
So this looks really cool. This is something you didn't mention, but there's an interesting, I think, relationship possible here between these data agreements and machine readable governance frameworks. I'm still thinking that through. I don't have anything wise to say at the moment, but I think it's worth thinking about.
We've about the machine readable. I'm running also in Trust of IP the privacy and risk. And we're trying to figure out sometimes the context of how the data is being shared. So let's say in one case, if your diagnosis doesn't reveal any hereditary or nothing so serious, it might not be as sensitive if you then identify as, yes, that you're conveying information that's more sensitive, and that gets flagged. So we can add part of the governance to be able to indicate a more sensitivity or not of the data that's being conveyed.
Right. From the perspective of forget me, this is kind of coming at the problem from the other side.
Yeah, figured.
Right? Where
they're coming from the front and then we meet in the middle.
Yeah. So the basic difference, right, is that you are sort of setting the rules and the revocability or the retraction of that at the very point of sharing. I love that, and it's nice and upfront. But one of the reasons why the Forget Me protocol was created is that someone said, "Well, how are we going to comply? How does someone execute a GDPR request to invoke the right to be forgotten?" And in that case, it would apply not just to all of the credentials shared, but any other information actually shared as well with any protocol, right? And so it's a little bit more like a, it's a little more, this is selective and very, you know, you could selectively, for example, revoke the data agreement for a particular credential and leave the other ones in place. And forget me is designed more or less as a nuclear option. Like
when you say nuclear, blockchain doesn't forget. And
no,
if you have a record on the holder and a record on those, the issuer verifier, I mean, you'll never be sure that they're completely forgetting.
Well, number one, we advocate for never, ever putting anything that contains PII or anything related on a blockchain.
Agreed.
Right. So that's covered. That's covered. But for example, I might present you credentials, but I might also use some other protocol for the coordination of whatever, right? That has some information about it. And so the nuclear option is, I want you to forget everything about me. It's not selective or gentle in any way. This is like a want to sever the relationship, forget everything. And there's a recognition in the RFC that there are sometimes legal reasons why the data holder can't actually forget something, because of like legal requirements to remember something. An example might be the records to support anti-money laundering efforts are something that like I can't just delete if you ask me to, because I've got this other legal requirement to do something. So there's a recognition of that, but it's more like an all-encompassing and like a binary thing, like forget me. Is way more nuanced and upfront in what's actually going on.
Here, I give you an example. We also cover withdrawal, which is one step from forget. You can request to withdraw. You can request to forget. You can request to access. I mean, you can. The key is that you're logging this information. I don't know if we realize it, but this data exchange, we need to be logging from a data controller perspective or your data processor, you need to be recording that. Regulators in the future are going to be looking at seeing that this is being implemented. I'm hoping and that we would also go towards receipts so that individuals has an overview of what's being transferred. And as you pointed out, that imposing that forget, how does individual know how to forget? And what we do with the data agreement, we can be upfront here. This is how you would apply any of your rights, including forget.
Right. So the other difference here that I see is one of complexity. The complexity of the forget me protocol is pretty low in terms of what it would be required to implement on both sides. And the nuance here requires a much deeper implementation that moves all the way through the information sharing stack. Now, to get the benefits it needs, right, for the purposes of data sharing agreements, it needs to do that, right? So it's not inappropriate in that case. But just highlighting the other difference between forget me and data sharing agreements is that difference in complexity of implementation.
I don't know if Lala's still on the call, but I don't think it's as different. Go ahead.
Yeah, I can come in quickly on that. See, what we've done is also like if you have an Akapai, we have a ready installer. So if you want to actually extend this, the whole stack with supporting data agreements, it's like a ready installation is available already today, for example.
That's awesome, but doesn't solve the problem for the folks that are trying to implement the protocol not on the Akapai stack.
Yeah, that's correct. Yeah, but
right.
The whole thing is like
this is not a criticism of your approach. The work that you've done is amazing, right? But in some ways, just despite the fact that you know retraction or forgetting is covered in both, the approach is substantially different.
Yeah. The question I have is that if the idea is also to comply with GDPR, it's not just forget me. You know, it's also like being able to download the data, being able to actually
withdraw,
like notify, and so on. So how do you intend to support all those other GDPR requirements.
That was not a goal of those requirements. The goal of this one was just to implement the process of forgetting.
Okay. Yeah. So for us, it was more about when we provide access to data via SSI stack, how do we ensure that the companies are adhering to GDPR fully? That has been our goal, and connecting Jan mentioned, connecting the whole thing to GDPR. So that's been pretty much what we are, the angle that we are really taking in. So the whole idea of introducing data agreement is very similar to how it works in the banking domain. So you want to actually keep a trail of the entire transaction and make it completely auditable. That's the whole idea that we try to.
So the interesting bit for discussion here then, sorry, I know there's hands up and I'll stop talking in a second. The interesting bit for discussion here then is if it's actually useful to just have a narrow forget-me lever that you can pull, or if that's actually insufficient for the purposes of GDPR and really the full complexity of data agreements is required in order to achieve that. And I don't have that answer.
Yeah, I think the way I would really ask the community or request the community is basically, how do you do it? If you actually have SSI stack with you, and if you are implementing a particular use case, how do you ensure that you are GDPR compliant for a particular company? At least based on the analysis that we have had, what we understand is that you end up doing a DPIA in every use case you implement. What we are trying to do is really avoid that situation, basically.
Sam, just to capture your wish to make it very simple, we could take a look at what you've done and then see how it could fit and in the full context of the life cycle of a data agreement or consent to use my data. But maybe we should go to the other hands that are up.
Yeah, I think Steve, you were first.
Oh, thank you. Excellent presentation. I have more of a procedural question than a technical one necessarily. So you're presenting here on this slide an agreement withdrawal. And I heard a couple of things in the preceding conversation. One was forget, and the other was logging under GDPR. So I'm not a GDPR expert, so I'm just trying to figure out what the requirement is. When there's a right to be forgotten and then there are these logs, how does that reconcile? Are we required to edit and delete from the logs, or is it just forget from like an active company processes or something? I was unclear on that.
Yeah, I think I understand what your question. I was trying to see if I could see the I have done a privacy mapping. I don't see it in this document. That would have been interesting to show, okay, these are the things we do to perform these different rights. The company needs to demonstrate that they are logging agreement or with the understanding is with the individual, which includes no personal data in that log. That's separate from when you're processing, you're holding it, and you might put in the system, you might do pseudo-anonymization to separate the PII, personal identifiable information, from the rest of the data, so they keep them separate. So at the point we withdraw or forget, you remove that pseudonymization or that link to the PII. So there's a little, and this is the reason I'm trying to work with ISO and these standardization to make it clear what do we need to think when working with DLT technology to ensure that we're not forgetting these privacy requirements and how we're logging, for example, in this consent management. We're great at the technology. Now we need the compliance with privacy regulation.
So just a follow-up question. So would there ever be a case where a company and an individual went and created an agreement using the methods you're describing here, also then withdrew that agreement. What I'm hearing, if I'm hearing correctly, is that maybe delete the pseudo anonymization, and then that way the non-PII data stays in the log, but it's not really linkable because you've deleted that link.
Yeah, there is no. When I gave the demonstration, there are two different things. One is the verifiable credential with your PII, and then you have the agreement. The agreement will not have any PII data. The link to the individual is using a DID unique to that relationship with that company. So you have no PII direct identifiable information in that agreement, just to make it clear.
Okay, I think I've got it now. Thank you very much.
You're welcome. Steven?
Steven.
Yeah, one of the things I see for this, it would be, I don't know if it's possible to get it through policy and things like that, but the GDPR cookies thing has been basically a disaster, right? Nobody does anything with it. Nobody likes it. No consumer likes it. So it's been, I would assume it's considered a disaster. What would be super interesting in this is if we can get the elements of this, the data elements standardized. So, through an RFC to start and so on, what that allows the consumer is that they can establish a policy or evolve a policy of what data agreements they're willing to accept. And, right. And more interestingly, a delta between what they want to accept in certain contexts and what the company is proposing in the particular transaction they're at now. So in that screen you showed, you could actually highlight, you've agreed previously in your social media context to allow these things, but these people want to do this, and this is the difference in your policy. That would be massive.
That's precisely what we want to do.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah.
I extend to the group if there's interest to look at it from a browser perspective. I'm talking with some companies and maybe starting an initiative in Kantara to define an API that could be used in the browser.
Yeah, yeah.
So that it would be easier for implementers of a website to use this API and then communicate with a local wallet through an extension to say, are there any agreements in place? If I visited the site before and it already has logged to reject or not this, the cookie. So you wouldn't have death by cookies, but it'd be invisible.
One of the interesting, and I think I come back to this every time I see these types of things from you, Jan, is that I think the place of enforcement, we in BC, we work closely with BC registries, which is who registers registered entities within the jurisdiction. What's a company, what's a sole proprietorship. I think that's the place of enforcement of these. That if as part of the collection of a company's information, they require the collection of the data privacy policy or data use policy of the company,
You still need to work with the from an individual perspective. I work with this concept of privacy preferences or consent management. So
absolutely,
from an individual, they wouldn't be responsible for that. And the interaction with this BC registry and how you communicate this is the data agreement for how I'm going to process your data. And here's the option to withdraw or forget. So if we visit a website, you collect that data agreement, leave that website, I want to forget, you have a clear record of it, and I click on it, and that site has to forget.
I so get that. What I'm saying is that every registered organization could have a a consistent policy enforced by registries to say, you got to tell us what your policy is. We don't care what it is. You just have to tell us what it is. And then that would allow the individual to see for every organization they interact with what the policy is. Yeah.
So yeah, this is a definition. So they would have, And they might even preset some what information is required to be filled.
Yeah.
Lau, you were going to say something.
Yeah, just to add in the whole idea, it's also is to make them all mission readable as well, so that it's not really only like a 15-page document. It's actually mission readable.
100%. Yeah.
Yeah. That's- so if you're interested or others are interested in that, browser aspect, please reach out and keep in the loop. As far as I'm seeing we're getting close to the hour. Sam, if you're good, I'd like to, for the next meeting, I don't know if it's in 1 or 2 weeks, we do a quick scan and we can talk offline to see if, is there an alignment that we could do? I know you're trying to approach this as minimalistic, but I'm trying to look at it from the whole picture of this consent and applying your rights. I think it'd be great if we could have a position from the group and how we apply these rights. So,
yes, I'd like to talk about it. Let me attempt to do it offline and we can start just in the Aries Working Group channel. And then I think that continuing this next week could be valuable. There are some other topics we might want to share time with, but I think that talking about that would be good. Let me put something a little later today on the Aries channel. And
when you say Aries channel, you mean the Rocket Chat, right?
The Rocket Chat.
We haven't moved back to Slack yet. We're still on the okay. Yes. I need to remember to start it. Thanks.
And Sam, one last question. Do you think it's a good idea to take the RFC route and see how to take it on board?
Say that again.
Do you think it's a good idea to put an RFC in the Aries, for example, and for, see how to take this for?
Somebody
for the data sharing agreement, using, you mean?
Yeah, exactly.
Yes. So that should happen regardless. And I can talk with you about that.
Okay. Awesome.
But yes, being able to understand it a little bit deeper, I think would be good. The main question in my mind is there a value in a sort of minimalistic approach to GDPR, or realistically, is it going to be completely insufficient anyway, because it only solves one part of the problem? And that's a question I'm also going to reach out to. I'd like to understand a little bit better first, but I want to reach out to some GDPR contacts that I have for their opinion. Mm-hmm. I'm not a lawyer, so I don't have
just
any
to give useful a little, opinion yeah, there. Just one last comment, if I may. So the whole idea that we have used, we have cooperated with a company called Privacyant, which is a Finnish company that is really a lawyer tech or legal tech GDPR company, basically. So the whole idea is that they have a tooling that actually helps you to do data production impact assessment. And what we are doing as we speak is really create a tunnel between the GDPR assessment tool to an SSI workflow. Such as like, you know, we're integrating the whole thing. So the outcome of the DPIA is a machine readable data agreement that can be imported directly to a to iGRAN, for example, or any SSI workflow engine.
Thank you for your attention, by the way. If you guys want to take this up in a future call, just let us know. It sounds like we might.
Thank you for your time presenting here. I think that one of the things which I notice for sure is the kind of the balance which we need between the technology and the legal world, especially as we call it input and the semantic stuff. So obviously identity, decentralized key management and all that stuff, it's cool. But if it doesn't deal with the data and how the data are dealt afterwards or during those processes, that's not worth the effort. We need to have both. So we need to figure it out how to tie that up together and make sure that both sides will work. As Sam pointed out, I mean, just having one thing just to do one small thing, not necessarily is enough to actually fulfill the legal requirements. So what's the point, right? So, or you will need to have a complex solution for that and deal with all the aspects, or not at all. So this is something which we obviously need to understand and see how we can make that true in the compliant way. Good. Then I think that's it for today. I don't know if because obviously 2 minutes, not much. Sorry, Sam, to not letting you.
No, this is good conversation. Get the time. We'll pick up the Aries conversation or the Aries. That's all an Aries conversation.
RFC. Yeah.
Well, the in particular the I have a link for that I dropped in the agenda to talk mm-hmm. about the UX of accepting connections. This is a topic that I've talked about before. It was about a year ago now, and anyone that's interested in that can go ahead and take a look at that. And I'm available for questions, and I can bring it. And I plan on talking about it next week as well. So, from that perspective, this has to do with what you share in an invitation before you actually set up a connection, and at what point you actually ask the user to accept a connection or not when you're, you know, responding to an invitation. So, but we'll get to that next time. This was a really useful conversation.
Okay, good. If there is nothing else, then thank you very much, everyone, for your time, and we'll meet in a week.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Thanks, everyone.
Bye, everyone.